Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Sadorit Group of Steward Partners Semi-Annual Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, there will be an opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note, this call may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Casey Snyder. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Raisa, and welcome, everyone. Casey Snyder and Tom Sadorit here, and we thank you for making time for this afternoon's The Sadorit Group's semi-annual conference call. We're calling this one Bear Market Survival.
And one little housekeeping item, actually a couple of them from Tom here. Thanks for joining us. I do want you all to know that if you're not local, we are experiencing some fairly heavy storms around us. And if we lose our connection, Casey and I will rebook the recording and record this at a later date and have it available as we have in the past. So if we lose the audio or visual connection today, we will rebook it and record it for you. Also, please be aware that Casey is getting over COVID. So if you hear a little nagging cough, he's trying to do the best with cough drops and whatnot. He's feeling fine. Barb had a hip replacement yesterday, so if I have to step away, you'll know what's going on at the Sadorit household. But other than that, we're happy to have you, and we'll go ahead. Thanks, Case.
Thanks, Tom. So our goal this afternoon is to provide a broad overview of our 2022 mid-year slide deck that is now live within our website, www.thesadoritgroup.com. And consistent with the format of prior calls, we're going to break up our conversation today into three sections. So first, Tom and I are going to look back on the first half of 2022 and discuss why the first 6 months of the year provided some of the ugliest returns in history, particularly within fixed income markets. Second, we're going to look beneath the surface and discuss how some of the variables that have caused such negative returns so far this year have been overshadowed by some positive developments for long-term investors, and we're going to discuss what those positive developments are in greater detail. And third and lastly, we'll provide some actionable planning and investment-related ideas so that when we discuss some of these with you in the coming months and years, they aren't a surprise. And then, like all of our calls, we will provide ample time at the end for Q&A. So with that, I'm going to begin by providing a short summary of 2022 before asking Tom several questions about topics of interest and or themes we feel are important for you to be aware of as we look towards the remainder of 2022 and beyond. So in looking back, it's hard to envision a worse start for markets in 2022. And as much as investors may have enjoyed opening their statements over the better part of the last 12 years, it was always a matter of time before a confluence of events, many of which we've discussed at length, would lead to a material correction within markets. And we know we may not enjoy it, but the cyclicality of markets is normal, even if the imbalances leading up to the peaks and troughs leave you feeling and or believing this time is different. So coming into 2022, we cautioned everyone about U.S. equity valuations being historically expensive, as was real estate, and cryptocurrency, and private equity markets. Basically, everything was rich. And we also expressed concern over the low interest rate policy given the resurgence of inflation. Back in January, and I'm actually quoting this from our January slide deck, we said, quote, whether this market has crested or is merely digesting the past 18 months of frenzied appreciation depends on who wins the ongoing tug of war between inflation and deflationary forces. It's a question trillions of dollars await an answer to, end quote. Well, obviously, inflation has since prevailed, and underlying inflationary forces being fanned by regional COVID policies and the tragic ongoing crisis in Ukraine, stock and bond markets around the world have corrected dramatically. Over in the fixed income world, if you were to compare bond market events over the first 6 months of the year to that of a hurricane, the bond markets may now be in the stage of, let's call it, cleanup and recovery, albeit with some financial and emotional scars to go with it. But, and it's an important but, yields and income streams are now at their most generous level in over 12 years, which is a welcome shift for investors and institutions who have been in search of yield and income. And on the other hand, equity markets may still be within the eye of the storm with additional downside exposure, depending on a multitude of factors. And I'm going to list some of them. So to include the ongoing presence of elevated inflation, the reaction of central banks and their interest rate policies. We have global geopolitical events, the ongoing crisis in Ukraine, COVID response policies, consumer demand and sentiment, the never-ending supply chain disruption, and the depth and duration of what may be a potential recession around the corner. Now, given all that I just mentioned, we believe it's a misnomer to claim uncertainty today is greater than in the past or any time when we may have felt more comfortable. Because let's face it, life is no more uncertain today than it was yesterday or the day before. But we do feel it's only prudent to acknowledge the wide range of realistic near-term outcomes associated with such a unique mix of market, geopolitical, and economic factors. And without the clairvoyance to declare what comes next or the ability to afford big bets and be wrong, we must instead trust the thoughtful plans built to reflect your goals and values to help guide our decisions during times of distress. And as you'll hear today and see within our slide deck available within our website, the first half of 2022 was historic for many unpleasant reasons, but like all bear markets, this too shall pass. And in our opinion, a reset was necessary to help pave the path for the creation and preservation of wealth in the years to come. And remember, recessions and corrections represent points in time, while the creation and preservation of wealth happens over time. So, all right, Tom, given that uplifting summary and my need for some water real quick, let's discuss some of the details of the first 6 months of the year before we begin to look ahead. And I want to start with the theme or the topic of valuations, in particular equity valuations. So prices have fallen. We're now in a bear market. What do valuations, U.S. equity valuations, look like today compared to, let's say, the beginning of the year?
Considerably cheaper, although recent rallies have taken some of that steam out of the bear market. But coming into 2022, and we talked about this in the beginning of the year, but I'm going to underscore it again, valuations in the U.S. equity markets were as rich as they've ever been in history. There were four standard deviations away from normal. Coming into the dot-com bubble in 2000, there were 3.2 standard deviations above normal. So that market was very, very rich in 2000. We warned about it in 1999 and 1998. Coming into this year, valuations were even richer. So we knew something had to give, and it did. We didn't know how it was going to give. I think there's probably another 15 to 20% on the downside possible in the equity markets if we were to truly mean revert. We will have to see if that happens or not. But buckle up, folks.
Okay, and so, you know, let's. I'm going to shift our attention away from valuations, but it is influential. Let's talk a little bit about something that's on the front page of every media outlet. We feel it every single time we go to the store, and that being inflation. And one of the primary reasons for the fall in stock prices was the dramatic return of inflation, and it not being transitory. Would you provide some color on the resurgence of inflation and its impact on equity prices and valuations?
Sure. Inflation is essentially a tax, and equity prices don't like it. They don't like it a lot at all. Bond prices like it even less, and hence the sell-off in both asset classes so far this year. Inflation may be moderating, but you notice that the Fed or any other economist is no longer using the term transitory or temporary. It looks like it's here to stay. Whether it gets as bad as the 1970s with double-digit inflation remains to be seen, but it is around, it is back.
And I don't think we can talk about inflation without talking about interest rates, because they do sort of have a yin-yang relationship. And I think a lot of people struggle to understand the relationship between inflation and interest rates. So would you mind clarifying sort of how the resurgence of inflation has altered interest rate expectations and how that's impacted the performance of markets this year? Because the first 6 months were dramatic. This was not a normal six-month stretch.
Yeah, I think you're the one that brought to my attention that this is the worst bond market since 1842 or something. And that was after the Civil War, as you might recall, and there was a major recession then that obviously none of us experienced, but it did happen. And of course, things recovered, markets normalized. This historic route in the bond market is probably over, if I were to guess. But I don't think the sell-off in the equities is done yet.
Yeah, there's a chart that we put up in our January update that showed how interest rates were expected to rise gradually, essentially, or at least markets had priced in a gradual rise of interest rates over the next, call it 2 to 4 years. But instead, what transpired is that interest rates are now doing what they were supposed to do over 3 or 4 years in a matter of basically 6 to 12 months. And with that, it caused this dramatic repricing within bond markets, to your point, Tom, as well as equity markets. And that has led to the first 6 months being part of what I would deem or call sort of the all-star lineup of bad markets. We joined the likes of, let's call it, the Great Depression, the 1937 crash, World War II, the 1970s bear market, the dot-com bubble, and the 2008 market. So that's not a pleasant lineup to be part of. I do want to just share a few numbers here, try to put in context. When we look at equity indices for the first 6 months of the year, we're looking at broad indices being down anywhere from 13.5 to almost 30. And then over in the bond market, we're seeing broad indices in the bond market being down anywhere from 8.5 to over 20%. So to see both markets, stocks and bonds, fall in tandem is a really unique occurrence. It's really only happened 4 times in the last 100 years. And Tom, I don't think it's happened since 1974. So really, I don't have any experience in this arena in terms of witnessing this before. But fun fact, it's never happened 4 quarters in a row. And to Tom's point, we're starting to see the bond markets normalize. Anything you want to add to that, Tom?
Yeah, 1974 was a very important year for me. It's when I made my first investment. I'd spent the evening with my father. He was bemoaning how his stock portfolio had been decimated by the Arab oil embargo, the recession, high inflation, et cetera. And we were at dinner because my mother kicked us out of the house because she was hosting her book club. So we were at a diner having a bite, and he was really quite unhappy about how his portfolio had performed. And I said, well, isn't there an opportunity here? And I, many of you also heard me say that back when I started my career in 1982, that we had 14% U.S. Treasury notes, and nobody wanted to buy them because they were guaranteed, that they were pretty certain that interest rates were going to go to 17%, which they never did. And of course, interest rates had been falling for 40 years. So My first investment was in 1974. It was an oil company. It was trading at about half of what it had been trading at 3 years prior, and had a 6% dividend yield. And I thought, well, this isn't so bad. So things worked out quite nicely, and I think this is an opportunity as well. So we'll take advantage of it.
Yeah, and we're going to come back to that theme here in a short bit. But to conclude the first segment of today's call, we've all just lived through a historic stretch, largely driven by the dramatic shift in interest rate expectations as a result of inflation returning to levels, like you said, Tom, not seen since the 1970s. But I want to move away from the last 6 months. It's obviously been a tough stretch, and move into the second segment of today's call, current themes as we look ahead. And I want to talk about what's maybe hidden beneath the surface of all the negative sentiment and ongoing banter about the potential magnitude of an oncoming recession. Because I think there are a lot of positive developments occurring that often don't get the attention they deserve because of how negativity sells. So the first subject I want to discuss here is just recessions in general, because the way the media portrays them, you'd think these things happen only, you know, once every 100 years or so, but in reality, they're quite common. So Tom, just a quick refresh of how common are they? You know, what is the average decline on the S&P during a recession? And in your opinion, why are recessions not necessarily a bad event?
I think you're the one that taught me the analogy of changing the oil in an engine. And that's what a recession really is. It flushes out bad capital. It brings new, fresh capital back into the markets. It's an opportunity if you're patient. To answer your question, the typical decline of the equity markets in a recession is around 30-35% on average, and they occur every 5 to 7 years, but we tend to have short-term memory and we forget the last recession. I've lived through a number of them. They've always presented opportunities for our clients, and we're going to make sure this one does too.
Well, in talking about silver linings or thinking about silver linings, and we just talked about how interest rates have risen quite dramatically over the first 6 months, but I think there's a really important silver lining beneath the surface regarding higher interest rates. What is that silver lining, and why should people be more excited than maybe they are?
Because for the last 8 to 10 years, we've been getting no yield on our fixed income holdings. We've held them nonetheless as ballast against what can happen in the equity markets, but they gave us nothing. Today, I'm actually excited about the bond market. I think yields are, you know, close to 3% on the 10-year. That's kind of appealing after having nothing, or even some parts of the world negative returns on fixed income.
Yeah, and just to add a couple of numbers to that, I mean, high-yield corporates at one point over the last year were yielding only 3.5%. Now they're up over 8%. Investment-grade corporates were down as low as 1.7%. Now they're just shy of 5%. I mean, these are really attractive yields for income-oriented investors or conservative investors that wanted to see some sort of return. Along those same lines, another silver lining here, and to expand on higher rates, is that of capital market assumptions. Capital market assumptions are the rates of return that are being modeled within financial planning software or pensions or actuarial analysis. And these are the assumed rates of return for the long term. And they're very important when it comes to constructing a realistic plan for the future. And with higher interest rates, to Tom's point, we now have higher yields and higher returns. With lower equity valuations, we now have higher projected future returns. And the opportunity set as a whole today with higher rates and lower valuations is much improved compared to where we were 6 to 12 months ago. And what's so interesting is that retail investors were gladly shoveling money into markets last year despite the opportunity set or capital market assumptions being some of the worst on record. And now that the opportunity set has improved, investors now seem hesitant. And this is sort of classic investor behavior, where investors tend to shy away when they don't get the immediate reward for taking risk, even though the investment is meant for the long term, and the best buying opportunities tend to be when markets are in decline. So the bottom line here is that investors should be more excited about the improved outlook compared to where we were. And Tom, without knowing, coming back to what you mentioned right at the beginning, without knowing if equities will fully mean revert or how long this bear market ends up being or whether there's a recession, and if so, how long it may occur, I think it's worth reminding everyone of the importance or of the role of dividend-paying strategies, because for whatever reason, they often don't receive the love and affection they're deserving of. So would you mind expanding on the role of dividend-paying strategies within distressed markets or long-term?
Well, sure. I mentioned the oil company I bought in 1974 with a 6% dividend and trading at half its price. That was a pretty attractive entry point. today, dividends, because stock prices have dropped off so handsomely, today dividends are actually kind of attractive. And many of you might recall the history lesson I gave a couple of years ago when we talked about the total return of the equity markets since inception, basically the 1870s, that the total return of equities on average is around 9%. What often is not mentioned, however, is that of that 9%, over half were due to the dividend return. So dividends, once again, are going to be very, very important.
Yeah, and within our slide deck that's available online, there's a chart that shows how dividends made up the majority of returns during low return decades. And you think about the 1970s or the 2000s or the 1940s, dividends make up the bulk of return. And for those disciplined that continue to reinvest and compound those dividends, during the next growth spurt, you can see some pretty significant appreciation occur. And Tom, our last theme as we look ahead, this is something that we cautioned everyone about last year during our mid-year update, and that is don't invest by looking in the rearview mirror. We had a chart that showed how market structure changes by decade. What do we mean by that? Why is it so important, and are we seeing some of that play out today?
Yeah, absolutely. What we talked about a year ago, or actually probably a year and a half ago, was about the FANG, which was an acronym covering a lot of the technology companies. And they had basically made up a big percentage of the return in equity markets in the U.S. If you didn't own the big tech names, you weren't participating in the rally. Well, obviously, things changed, leadership changes. Today, the tech stocks are out of favor. Energy, utilities, other things are back in favor. The value set has come back in to favor. And that is a reminder, as always, that diversification really does matter. Don't chase after what did well last year. Consider what might do better and might do well in years ahead.
Yeah, the leaders running up into the bubble or into the peak of the market are rarely the leaders coming out of it. And that brings us to the third segment of today's call, which is actionable ideas for the months or years ahead. And we're not going to discuss specific investment strategies during this segment today because of how everyone's investment strategy and holdings are unique to their own plan, their own income needs, you know, risk tolerance, tax exposure, et cetera. And instead, we're going to focus on four action items that are more applicable to what we think are everyone on today's call. And we want to start with something that's probably very basic, but it's really important advice regarding some of the things that people can do for themselves if and when we do enter into recession and or during times of market distress. And Tom, we wrote about this a few months ago within our website called Reality Check, but would you mind sharing a few snippets from that update?
Sure. I remember vividly the 2008-2009 crisis and how people were feeling. Certainly when the pandemic broke out, feelings went all over the place. So this is just a reminder that please take care of yourself, both physically and mentally. Make sure to eat and exercise, eat well and exercise, get plenty of sleep. Take comfort from the bounty that your family is provided and show gratitude, because everybody on this call, I can tell you, is a very fortunate person. And do limit the fire hose of daily news. It can be overwhelming at times. It doesn't mean you have to tune it all out, but digest it in snippets, not with a fire hose in your mouth. And understand your cash flows well enough to adjust spending if you need to. And look for positives, because they're out there for sure. I see them every day, particularly after what we've been through in our family the last few months. If you want a book to read that'll give you a little bit of hope about what the world might look like in the future, I recommend The Power of a Crisis by my friend Ian Bremmer.
Thank you, Tom. And I'm going to change gears here from taking care of ourselves and keeping our composure to the subject of tax efficiency. But the next action item here is that of tax loss harvesting. It's one of the few silver linings of a down market, and it's something that we've been very active with over the past few months. For those of you on the call that have seen activity within your accounts, there's a good chance that this is what we've been doing on your behalf. So Tom, would you provide a brief summary of what is tax loss harvesting? And then secondly, why is it so important to take advantage of down markets from a tax perspective?
Sure. Well, I think people forget that it's not what you make, but it's what you make net of taxes that really matters. And with this billion-dollar lottery pot floating around out in the ether, people are starting to focus on what state you would take your benefit if you won the $1 billion, or where would you pay the least amount of taxes? Well, markets, when they go down, provide an opportunity to do swaps. You sell something at a loss, you've got a credit with the IRS, you buy something essentially similar or equivalent, participate when the market rallies back, but you've got this credit with the IRS. In some cases, and we did this in 08 and 09, we did it as the pandemic unfolded. Sometimes those credits with the IRS are paying off and benefiting our clients for 5 or 10 years later. It's a wonderful thing. And we look at bear markets as opportunities, not as scary.
Yeah, and I think we all anticipate, or at least we anticipate, that tax rates are likely to rise in the years ahead. So why not accumulate as many credits as you possibly can now? Speaking of taking advantage of down markets, I'm going to quote Winston Churchill here with the quote of "Never let a good crisis go to waste." And Tom, you've been an investor now through, if I have this correct, 6 recessions, 11 bear markets. And I think most people associate recessions or bear markets with declines. But in fact, bear markets or recessions often create dynamic opportunities for wealth creation. So can you speak to the opportunities of bear markets and what you've seen over the duration of your career in terms of some of that wealth creation?
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that some of the most difficult market environments are actually the best opportunities for our clients. And they don't see it that way. They see, oh my God, I've lost money. When in fact, they probably haven't lost money. The value of their account may have gone down, but their dividends are still the same. They're still getting the income they need to live their lives. But we do see this as an opportunity for particularly, I think, for your generation, Casey. Many of your peers have not lived through this yet. They don't see it as the opportunity that it is. And it's the old gray-haired folks like me that look at these environments and say, oh boy, this is really attractive. I'm not saying we're done with the sell-off in the equity markets yet. There may be another leg down, but don't miss a good opportunity and don't fail to take advantage of a good crisis.
Yeah, I mean, even though recessions are in fact common, to your point, Tom, about every 5 to 7 years, I think about the wealth that's been created following, 1982, 1987, the early 90s recession, the tech bubble, the housing crisis. I mean, some serious wealth has been created for those that had the discipline to continue to execute their plan when the world around them can be pretty scary. And that's going to bring us to our last action item here. For the year or years ahead, and that is Roth conversions. And we know that many of you have heard this before, but we think it's worth repeating. Discussions in D.C. about tax policy changes and increases have quieted because of more immediate economic and geopolitical concerns. And we're still of the belief that tax rates will rise over time and that our current tax environment remains attractive relative to history. So, Tom, please provide a quick summary of Roth conversions and explain why they may be such a valuable tool for many, not all, but for many when we look ahead.
Yeah, they are specific to each unique client for sure, but Roth conversions are a great opportunity, particularly if you think tax rates might rise in the future, which I think everybody does. I joke that early in my career, I used to spend maybe 5 to 10% of my day talking to accountants and attorneys for our clients in terms of strategy. And I would say today it's 40 to 60% of my day is where I'm talking to my clients' accountants, tax counsel, or legal counsel about how to minimize the tax bite. So if you think about a Roth conversion, and it's pretty clear for what Congress has in mind from some of the actions they've already taken, a Roth conversion creates a huge benefit for future generations if it's done properly and if the client has the ability to pay the tax on the conversion from other funds that they might have at the bank or whatever. But giving money to the next generation tax-free, that grows tax-free, is a great, great gift.
Yeah, we have a long list of those to follow up with in the fall. We typically review and evaluate Roth conversions come September, October, when we've got a better sense of year-end capital gains and dividend estimates. We've already started to proactively connect with many accountants on this front in teeing up what is likely to be a very busy fall on this front. So if you have any questions regarding this, please don't hesitate to let us know. And if it's something that we've already discussed, we will be reaching out to you here in the coming months to discuss the details. And that is going to bring us to the conclusion of our mid-year update.